In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Time for us to talk movies. Let's Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us right here in studio. Welcome back, Mr. Adams.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Fabulous. How's your dreary Monday so far?
Yeah, it's not great out there, is it?
Jeez.
But, you know, at least it's not 100 degrees. I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And it'll get better as the week goes on here. You had a good weekend?
I did. I was telling you off air, Sheridan and I maybe socialized a little bit more than we're used to. And so, you know, it's been great. And seeing everybody is wonderful. And, you know, it's lovely to catch up with folks. But, you know, it's like, I grew accustomed to a certain lifestyle over the past year and a half.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll change my shirt. You know, okay. I mean, I suppose I can, you know, engage people who aren't my wife in conversation for more than 30 seconds at a time. But, you know, at a certain point, it's just like, I'm just very tired of people.
Yeah. And I know for Carrie and I on our little journey, plus I had gone out, Abby and I had gone out on a date night Thursday. So
right.
Between Thursday and Saturday, I went out basically four times, which I think was equal to all the times I had been out post pandemic.
Right. There's just so like, and I get it. And I like the tendency, that sort of desire to, you know, cause it has been so long and it's just like, oh, we can, it feels okay to do things.
Yes.
And see people. So let's do that. And, you know, and it is, you know, you kind of maybe overbook and overwhelm yourself a little bit. Although, not to be a downer, but, you know, I feel like it might be getting while the getting's good.
Well, yeah. Right. Do it while you can.
You know.
Back on lockdown in a month.
I just, yeah, it's, you know, I'm just trying to keep a happy face, stay optimistic, you know, maybe it'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Sure. Maybe all those unvaccinated people will suddenly reverse course and say, I've been wrong. I've been selfish.
Yes, because, I mean, one thing we've learned over the past 5 years or so is people are super easy to, it's super easy to get people to acknowledge when they've made a mistake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I recovered from the trip by spending essentially 24 hours from the time we got back into Bangor. I saw my daughter, and that was only for like 10 minutes.
Yes, there you go.
She came to get some stuff from the house and was gone. It was like 10 minutes in 24 hours. The rest of it was just me.
I was going to say, that's
just me.
I mean, I'm going to be real with you, Carrie. That actually sounds pretty dope.
That was how I recovered.
That's not a bad way to do it. All right, well, let's talk movies. You got a chance to see three over the weekend.
I did.
Where do you want to begin?
Yeah, well, you know what? We'll just get this out of the way. I saw, I actually went to the movie theater to see Escape Room Tournament of Champions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for doing that for us.
It is a sequel to 2019's Escape Room. A movie which, you know how you watch a movie and you're like, it's bad, but it's not like so bad that you're like that you're actively angry about it. It's just like, well, my time's kind of being wasted here, whatever. And then that same movie has the audacity to set itself up for like a sequel, and you're like, come on, guys, like, I mean, we're all adults here, like we know better than this, right? Turns out I do not know better than this because they went ahead and made another one. It's everything you need to know is right there in the title. It's escape rooms. There's an evil corporation that sets up deadly escape rooms that they film for the amusement and gambling pleasure of the uber wealthy. You know, people have to solve the puzzles and do escape rooms. And if they don't do it right, they die. The sequel is that. Only it's, they just bring together a bunch of people who have survived previous escape rooms at the hands of this faceless corporation. And now, so we get the Tournament of Champions. And that's pretty much it. They work their way through the various puzzles. People die along the way. And it's borderline impossible to give a crap about any of these people. Like, they're just it's all a mechanism to work through the sort of elaborate, like, isn't this cool? And yeah, it's basically like PG-13 Saw. Like, it's not as bloody, but it's the same sort of like weirdly convoluted, if you think about it for even a second, it all falls apart kind of situation. Like, the logistics behind, okay, so this, the Minos Corporation is what they're called, and it's like,
oh my god,
well, it's just, you know, the Minotaur, and it just, it's so like, it's so on the nose and dumb, and you just, whenever you stop for a second, it's like, man, so these, like, all this must be costing hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, where's the profit margin in this, leaving aside the fact that the logistics are impossible? I don't understand how this can possibly be a viable business model. But again, you know, that's why the CEO of Minos gets the big bucks, I suppose.
Right.
You know, and there's a ridiculous third act twist, as these movies often have. You know, I'm trying not to spoil things too much, just on principle. Honestly, I don't think anyone needs to see this movie. But I felt the same way at the end of this one that I felt at the end of the last one, because they definitely left the door open. And it's like, really, guys, is this what we're doing? Hopefully, this one will not be as financially successful, and we all can make our escape from the escape rooms.
Right. That's one. What's next?
Well, it's, do you want to talk about the good one, or do you want to talk about Space Jam?
Let's talk about the good one, because Carrie apparently saw it too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I watched it. Loretta and I watched it last night.
Oh, that's awesome. I've already lost track of which one I was going to talk about.
Not Space Jam.
Okay, yes. Gunpowder Milkshake, which is a both ridiculous and awesome name for a movie. One of the things that I realized when I was getting ready to watch this movie is it's very indicative of the sort of state of movie watching writ large these days, specifically in terms of like the sort of constant churn that comes with Netflix. Because Netflix, they made their commitment, like, you know, one new movie every week for the entirety of the year. And, you know, and when you commit to that kind of volume, quantity sometimes gets in the way of quality. And so some of these movies that they've rolled out have not been particularly good. But then you see a trailer, like the trailer for Gunpowder Milkshake, and you're like, huh, you know, I don't really know what's going on here. But I'm definitely intrigued. And then you turn it on and you watch, and it's like, oh, okay. So it's like a female forward riff on John Wick, like, with only if the script was written by like Quentin Tarantino and Wes Anderson directed it. Like, it's got this weird sort of combination of influences that are very, very obvious. You know, it's almost a pastiche of those influences. But you know how sometimes those pastiche kinds of films can feel really derivative. Like this one, it was very obvious what its influences were, but it still worked. Like, it still felt like its own thing. And I wasn't really expecting that. Like, I figured it would be okay. I did not expect to like it as much as I did. It's, so the basic gist is you have this sort of shadowy, like fully realized sort of underworld kind of situation. A woman named Sam, played by Karen Gillan, who's awesome, she's a sort of hired killer. She works for an organization known only as The Firm, run by a bunch of old white guys in suits. The sort of manager of HR, which is hilarious, is a guy named Nathan, played by Paul Giamatti. Always nice to see Paul Giamatti, who has been sort of a guardian of sorts for Sam for the past 15 years, ever since her mother, Scarlett, played by Lena Headey, had to leave after a job went bad and abandoned her in the diner. This diner is a sort of a recurring set piece, similar to the Hotel Continental in the John Wick franchise. It is a place where bad guys can meet without fear of getting shot. Although it's only a gun prohibition, so like knives and like bats and crowbars and those sorts of things are all sort of allowed. Again, that might be a loophole that they would consider closing. But anyway, so Sam also has a job that goes bad, Some guy has stolen from the firm. She has to go get it back. Only it turns out he was stealing it to protect his young daughter, played by a young lady named Chloe Coleman, who is excellent. Just an outstanding child actor performance out of her. So Sam, is kind of left at sea. The only help she has are the librarians, because you go to the library to exchange your guns. Wow. Because it's that kind of place. The three librarians played by Carla Gugino, Michelle Yeoh, and Angela Bassett. So, I mean, wow. Just stacked. Like, the cast is stacked. And then Sam has to basically fight her way through the sort of, never-ending waves of bad guys, because not only is the firm after her, but the dude whose son she killed when she wasn't supposed to, all his dudes are coming after her too. And so it just all devolves into a lot of really intricately choreographed gunplay and hand-to-hand combat, and really just the sort of stuff you love to see. I thought it was really fun. It's not the greatest movie in the world, and it maybe takes a little bit longer to get going than it ought to. It spends a little bit more time. The expository aspect of the thing probably goes on a few minutes too long. It's a little clunky. But once the action really starts sliding in, you start to get these really wonderful sort of stylized moments, alternating from really noir-y, shadowy type stuff to the real like lurid kind of neon lit sort of stuff. And it shouldn't work. Like, it should feel a lot more patchwork than it does, but it's pretty seamless. And again, like, it's a movie that's got its flaws, but it was far and away the most fun I had watching a movie this weekend.
Nice. And so, well, that brings us to Space Jam. Speaking of, why did they need a reboot, a sequel, or whatever this is?
Right. Like, movies like this, I'm always reminded of something that beloved internet arbiter Judge John Hodgman often says: nostalgia is a toxic impulse. I don't necessarily always agree with that. I am someone who finds great value in those sorts of nostalgic remembrances, but when pushed too far, the end result is something like Space Jam: A New Legacy. Because, again, I will concede I don't necessarily have the affection for this movie that those, even just a couple of years younger than I am, do. The movie came out in 1996, so I'm sort of a later Gen X, like the sort of geriatric millennial crowd is more for this film. They're the ones who really like have that strong connection to it. So we're back. LeBron James stars, produces, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right. How to describe the plot of Space Jam? Okay, so LeBron, we have an early scene where it's young LeBron and his buddy at a basketball practice. His buddy gives him a Game Boy. LeBron plays with the Game Boy when he's not paying attention at practice. And then he winds up missing the shot that wins the game. And then the coach gets mad at him afterwards and is like, you gotta focus, you gotta stay the course, you gotta all that stuff. Flash forward to present day, LeBron is LeBron, and his kids, he's pushing them in the same way that he was pushed. His older son wants to follow in the dad's footsteps and be a basketball player, but the younger son wants to make video games. LeBron doesn't approve of making video games. It's all about, you gotta focus on basketball. Like, that's the important thing. You gotta have the mind of the heart of a champion, etc. Meanwhile, okay, this is where it gets stupid. In the Warner Brothers offices, in their servers, there is an algorithm that is being used to make decisions. The algorithm and artificial intelligence is sentient, because of course it is, and it is played by Don Cheadle.
Alrighty.
Guess what Don Cheadle's character's name is?
I don't know.
Al G. Rhythm.
Yeah.
Come on. That's what we're dealing with here. And so Al G. Rhythm has this plan that's never really made clear, something preposterous and convoluted, I'm sure. But he needs LeBron to execute said plan. Again, don't understand why. But he gets called in for a meeting with the Warner Brothers executives. LeBron's like, yeah, no, this doesn't sound like it's for me. And an enraged Algy Rhythm opens up some sort of weird matrix hole in the basement and sucks in LeBron and LeBron's video game making son. And so now he's in the, wait for it, serververse. And Algy Rhythm challenges LeBron to a basketball game. And if LeBron wins, he and his son can go home. But if Algy Rhythm wins, LeBron has to stay in there forever.
Wow.
And yeah, and then he gets the kid gets sort of spirited away, and LeBron gets sent on a tour of the various Warner Brothers owned intellectual properties, the various worlds. There's a Harry Potter world, there's a Matrix world, broke my heart to see it. There's a Casablanca world.
Oh God.
Yeah.
No.
Just
no.
I mean just moments. We're just flying through these places until we finally land on the Looney Tunes planet, which is abandoned for some reason. Except for Bugs Bunny, who is doing Bugs Bunny stuff. Nice to see Bugs, I'm not gonna lie.
How's Bugs in this?
He's fine. Yeah. Like, he's pretty much the only one who gets to keep really any of his shtick, which was kind of nice. Because all the other Looney Tunes were tricked into getting onto a rocket by Algy Rhythm for, again, reasons. Bugs offers to help LeBron put together a basketball team, but what he really means is he's gonna get all his friends back. And so then we go back to the various WB intellectual property worlds where the various characters have taken up residence, particularly Lowlights, Granny and Speedy Gonzalez in the Matrix world. And well, you remember what the name of the piano player in Casablanca was?
That would be Sam.
Yeah. So who do you think the piano player was? Who do you think they found playing the piano in Casablanca world?
Not Yosemite.
Rackin' frackin', tinkle tinkle. So they bring everyone together and then they get ready to play a basketball game. Meanwhile, Algy Rhythm is turning LeBron's son against him and basically stealing the character designs that he invented with, frankly, miraculous technology. Like, I really wonder, like, apparently being an NBA player's son gets you access to some really high tech stuff. But he did basic figure models of a bunch of professional basketball players, and then they got turned into weird creature things. Anthony Davis is some kind of bird thing. Sue Bird is like some kind of snake. Damian Lillard is a robot. Just dumb stuff like that. And then they play a basketball game. But it's not really a basketball game because it takes place within the context of LeBron's son's video game. And so LeBron has to remember how to let loose and have fun if they're going to have any chance of winning. Yeah. And by the way, who's watching this? Literally every character that Warner Brothers owns. So, were you curious to know what White Walkers thought about weird basketball? Because they're there. The Penguin, he's also there. Oh, Jabberjaw, the Iron Giant, King Kong, they're all there. Just sitting around the basketball court watching stuff happen. It's weird.
Wow.
It's weird and it's not very good. Now,
how's LeBron? Because he was okay and in Trainwreck?
Yeah.
He did a cameo and he was fine.
Like, here's the thing. Like, I don't think there's any question that LeBron is a better actor than Michael Jordan ever was. But the reality is, like, there's a certain weird charisma to Jordan that I just don't think LeBron can match. Like, there's a watchability to Jordan that I think transcends, you know, the standard things like, you know, not sounding like you're reading lines off a card. He's fine. It's not...
So it's not his fault.
It's not his fault. I mean, well, he produced the thing, so in that sense, it's his fault. But in terms of how bad the movie actually is, not so much. I will say there are a couple of decent jokes. We do get some Looney Tunes action. The basketball game gets pretty absurd in ways that I occasionally found amusing. There are a couple of pretty good throwaway gags, and one joke revolving around a cameo. You see it coming a mile away, but even when it happens, it's still pretty funny. But for the most part, it's just like, man, like, why are we doing this?
Would kids like it?
Probably.
Yeah.
Like, probably. And that's the thing. And, you know, and kids are going to like it. And so 20 years from now or whatever, we're going to have to do this all over again with, you know, with LeBron Jr. or whoever the hell else is.
See, and I didn't even think the first one was that good.
It's not. Like, it's not. It's just, it comes back to that sort of toxicity of nostalgia. It's like, this thing was something that was important to me when I was at the age when I will always remember the things that were important to me.
Right.
You know, and it's a confluence of circumstances, you know, Michael Jordan being the greatest player in the history of the world, you know, combined with the Looney Tunes having that sort of energy. And so that came together and it worked. I don't know. I don't know that lightning could strike twice in that way, you know? So it's, yeah, I know they were looking for a slam dunk, but Rich, this is an air ball.
All right, there you go. Alan Adams breaking it down for us on Pass the Popcorn. Thank you, Al.
You're very welcome.
Don't socialize until we see each other again on Wednesday.
You know, I wish I could promise that, but there's stuff on the calendar.
Oh, man.
I'm very tired.
I bet. Well, pace yourself.
Will do.
All right, see you soon. Alan Adams on Downtown.